mainly it was just the cash flows. It's like just comparing apples to apples. It's like, I can purchase this type of property for a long-term rental and it can do this compared to the cash flows, which were like 10, 15X like on the net.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Passive Income Pilots. Tate Duryea here with Ryan Gibson. How you doing, Ryan?
Good. I'm excited to talk about short-term rentals. They were like all the rage during COVID. And I'm excited to hear about like hot, like soup to nuts, how to set them up, how to run them, how to do everything. And also like what's going on with short-term rentals today too. We'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we've heard a lot about the Airbnb bust, which I think there's some validity to it, but it depends on what market you're in. So
yeah,
we know a lot of pilots are interested in buying STRs now because they've been listening to the CPAs that we brought on. And if you can't get real estate professional status so that you can write off that real estate depreciation, whether it's through a syndication or through your own property against your active income, well, you can use that strategy where you buy a property, convert it to a short-term rental if it's not already. And as long as you self-manage it, that's considered active income. And if you do a cost segregation study on it, go back and listen to Toby Mathis, episode 10 and episode 14. If you haven't already, you can use that, you know, this sort of short-term rental loophole, which is just fantastic. So we're going to get all through the process of short-term rentals and how to make them work. Today, we're joined by Alex Jarbo, who is the founder of Open Atlas Investments. Alex is at the forefront of revolutionizing the vacation rental and hospitality industry with his focus on custom, unique micro-resort developments with an impressive portfolio of over $10 million in distinctive short-term rentals. He sets his sight on constructing over 1,000 exceptional units worldwide within the next 5 years. So, Brian, with that,
let's jump in and learn how to become a full-time real estate investor through short-term rentals. Let's roll.
Alex, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. So we have, as we mentioned in the intro, a lot of pilots that are interested in short-term rentals because of the tax benefits. You know, you can convert a rental into a short-term, and if you manage it yourself during the first year, you can conduct a cost segregation study and depreciate it. So we want to get into the nuts and bolts on how to do that. If somebody's never done it before, can we start from the beginning and first off, get a little bit of background about yourself, how you got into this, and then sort of like start from the beginning, let's talk about location and then build on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started in real estate back when I was still in the Marine Corps. I had like my last year in the Marine Corps, I had decided that I didn't want to stay in or re-enlist. So I decided to, I picked up every type of real estate book I can find at that time. And originally flipping had caught my eye. So I joined a flipping mentorship, a couple groups, and I was on a call with one of the mentors of that flipping mentorship. And he had mentioned that all of his long-term wealth was tied into short-term rentals. And this was back in 15, 16. And, that really piqued my interest even more than the flipping stuff. So I actually got him on a call and he sort of taught me different, one, how to choose a market, but also, just how to underwrite a vacation rental, which at that time there was maybe one book on the entire topic. And so he actually helped me decide on a market, which is where I currently live right now, of Asheville, North Carolina. So like the day I got out of the military, moved straight here. I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan. Didn't even think twice about moving back to Detroit. And I originally got my real estate license when I got here, and I practiced as a real estate agent for 2 years, helping people just buy and sell vacation rentals, short-term rentals, and just single-family houses. And by the end of my second year, I'd moved here for vacation rentals, but I was looking at stuff. Everything was either way out of my price range, or it was in my price range, but it wouldn't have done well as a short-term rental. It's just there was nothing unique about it. So my very first real estate investment was an 830 square foot A-frame ground up development from dirt, nothing. That first one turned into two really quickly, two turned into four. brought on some investor capital for some friends, built another six out, and then started taking on raising capital ourselves and bringing money in from funds. And today we're either developing, managing, or purchasing over $30 million in vacation rentals.
Wow.
Hey, that's incredible.
I got three follow-ups. One, thank you for your service. Were you on Ethan and I?
I wasn't at Ethan. You're cool. The first person that I've done close to 100 podcasts, and you're the awesome. First person to ever ask me that. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard taps play every night from my house. I was at 13th and L. That was my first rental property that I bought.
Actually, let me move my camera real quick. I actually have my shadow box there from when I was there. Like,
congrats. I went to the Friday night parade maybe twice when I was there.
Yeah, that was my life there. Was the 21 gun. I was in charge of the 21 gun salute team for 2 years. I ended up staying my whole 4 years there. So I was a squad leader there. And Friday night parades were my life. I mean, for those 4 years.
If you're in Washington, D.C. on a Friday night in the summertime, check out the Marine Corps barracks on 8th and I. If you can get an invite to the Honor Guard and the Friday night parade, they always have an awesome speaker. I got to see Biden speak. Can't remember who the
when
other
was
person.
That?
2009-ish, 2010-ish.
Okay. Yeah.
I was, you were there in 16, right?
I was there 13 to 17, yeah.
13 to 17, okay. Yeah. I had just moved out in 2014, 15. And then you said you're from Detroit. So I'm from Detroit too, but Detroit, no one's really from Detroit. So where in Michigan are you from?
Well, I grew up on 7 Mile in Woodward my parents,
that's rare.
My parents live in like 30 minutes north in Sterling Heights now. So that's our home base whenever we go back to Michigan. Yeah.
Awesome. And then, ground up development. I mean, you did I'm kind of interested in your inspiration to do short-term rentals. What inspired that? Because I mean, you don't just, you know, at the military barracks and then you're doing the Honor Guard and then all of a sudden you're like jumping out of there and writing a book and doing short-term rentals. And then of all the things you could do on your first real estate deal, I mean, if you're listening to this and you haven't done real estate, it's like ground up development is like for the fearless, right? Like you just, that's like going into the hardest part.
It's like you don't know what you don't know when you're starting. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I got lots of stories there, but really interesting story. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
So what inspired that? What drew you to the short-term rental market? I mean, I know you said you were interested in flips, but then, you know, what really drew you towards that?
That first mentor showed me his cash flows. He was very open with his numbers. And what I was learning about both flipping, but also just normal, say, long-term rental, like buy and hold strategy, the numbers weren't even close, even at that time. But even now, I mean, they've definitely softened a little bit with more people catching on to vacation rentals and short-term rentals. But mainly it was just the cash flows. It's like just comparing apples to apples. It's like, I can purchase this type of property for a long-term rental and it can do this compared to the cash flows, which were like 10, 15X, like on the net. So that's where the inspiration from that came. And then the inspiration for ground up development was I just couldn't afford anything. Like we built that 800 square foot A-frame, that we still own to this day. And that one, like every single square footage is optimized in that, but there's not a one wasted square footage. So it's like the ground up development made sense to me at the time. I mean, it still does, but like, I didn't know what I was getting into. Like you said, it was just the cost, obviously. I mean, we spent probably with furnishing it with holding costs and everything about $225,000 to build that one out. That one has consistently netted us, including last year, anywhere between $48,000 in the first year after debt service, all the way up to, I think last year we netted it $56,000 just off that first one.
Wow.
So like I always tell, I think I put my Adam, because we got a construction loan on that deal. I've spent about $35,000 with furnishing, holding costs, down payment and everything. I got like a 10% down loan at that time. It's crazy because I talk about that first deal being so lucrative because like my cash on cash on that deal technically is over 100% a year. But I hate saying that because it doesn't sound real. That was just like the aha moment that led to all the other unique builds and whatnot.
Well, if you're listening, you know, congratulations on your success and making that awesome for ground up development. It's rare to find somebody who's had success with ground up development right off the bat. You know, usually you hear about the contractor that runs away or the cost overruns or it took longer than it needed to, or, you know,
I will say it wasn't like all beautiful, but like even with the cost overruns and everything, that stuff did happen. It's just now being on the other side of it and managing that property for like 6-7 years now. I mean, I don't even think about that stuff anymore.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Can I just ask a quick question for the listeners? What's the difference between STR, short-term rental, vacation rental? You know what?
Can so we kind of break, I put short-term rentals under two umbrellas. Like the midterm rental strategy has become way more popular as interest rates have gone up in the last like 12 months. That's not the only reason why they become popular, but I would say short-term rentals to me fall under midterm rentals. Short-term rentals, like anything under 30 days, midterm rentals is like 6 months and under. And vacation rentals to me is anything that's in a destination location. Like in my opinion, Asheville is like more of a rural mountain town, beer, hiking type of city. That's a vacation rental to me. And the analogy I always like to use is a vacation rental is like, imagine like Detroit, Michigan or San Diego, or on the West Coast, you have, or on the East Coast, you have like New York. People will drive like anywhere between an hour to two, to these like specific markets. In those three cases, north, to stay like for like an extent, they'll take like an extended weekend vacation. Joshua Tree, you have in San Diego, a Big Bear Lake, and then you have like northern Michigan here on the East Coast. That's what I consider like a vacation rental market, is like where people are taking extended weekend vacations to, where historically they're actually like vacation rental friendly, which we can talk 3 hours about regulations and whatnot. But like we're also investing in areas that are historically been vacation rental markets before VRBO, Airbnb was a thing.
So yeah. I want to talk about location next. I think I want to interject real quickly and just clarify that in the eyes of the IRS, just keep in mind that if you are trying to take advantage of this loophole, that the average stay at your property has to be 7 days or less. Ryan, you remember that from, but no, that's a valid point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you may be listening and there might be a good strategy to have greater than 7 days, but if you want this 100%. To qualify you as a real estate professional, it's got to be seven days or less. So don't do a midterm strategy and then, or have to pivot into long-term and bank on that strategy, right? So that you can do whatever you want. But yeah. Good clarification.
And also that it's the short-term rental strategy. This is not the real estate professional status thing. So if you can't qualify for real estate professional status and you want to use a short-term rental and depreciate that, in order for it to classify as an active activity, it needs to be 7 day or less average stay. But anyway, Alex, locations, regulations are a big issue. I spend a lot of time in Hawaii where I'm based with my airline. They have completely wiped out the Airbnb market by regulating it out of existence. I think a lot of that was driven by the hotel lobby and rising real estate prices that were kind of pricing a lot of people out of the market. What are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts about investing out of state if you live in a state that it's difficult to get it done? And where should people be looking?
So when we first started, so here's another good example. So Hawaii was one of the first states to outlaw it completely. I think they're the only state that had done that. And when I first started, vacation rentals were legal in Asheville with a permit. Just out of necessity, I couldn't invest in downtown or like close to, with an Asheville address, because it was just more expensive. And so I actually opened up like the MLS, because when I had access to it, and I pulled up like the city map, like the county and the city lines, and I just invested just in the county instead of in the city. With COVID, COVID sort of opened that up where people left the city and sort of went into a more rural market. If you look at the data, with all the national parks saw record numbers during the lockdowns when the national parks reopened. And people are more comfortable now. Like, we invest in drive-in cities. Lyft and Uber are still a thing here, but they're not as big as like DC where I was at, or in New York or whatnot. People are more comfortable, a little bit more comfortable. Most of our properties are 15 to 20 minutes to downtown, where people can get that downtown feel, but drive 15, 20 minutes and sort of be in a more rural setting. That's sort of the markets right now. I'm just invested in Asheville. Our $30 million portfolios in Asheville, but we've already identified markets that are similar to it. I like mountain markets that aren't like ski resort or like resort type cities. Those tend to be a little bit less seasonal as well. So when it comes to location, I like a little bit more rural setting. It's going to be cheaper. And people are way more comfortable driving now, like 15, 20 minutes to get away from a downtown if they can drive in.
Yeah. That's a great point. Great point. So I guess.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. Another thing too, which we pivoted to the last couple of years, is you can skirt almost every single, and this is for the bigger projects, but you can skirt almost every single vacation rental law in your area, depending on the zoning, if you apply for a hotel permit, if you do a big enough project that allows you to do a hotel permit. Now, a hotel permit doesn't mean that it's just one building. Like we've gotten these hotel permits on like cabin communities and whatnot.
Interesting. So, I've never heard of that.
There are a lot of people that are doing that. They're doing convert. Like I know Saunders doing it. They're doing conversions into from multifamily into hotels and whatnot as well.
Interesting. Also check with your CPA, because I believe if you do offer hotel style amenities, it precludes you from claiming it as active income because it's classified as a business. But excellent strategy, particularly if you are a real estate professional. So I've never heard of that. And that's really, really interesting that you can apply for a hotel permit.
Again, every single city is going to be different. Every area is going to be different. But I have, I'm a part of a coaching group that I coach for, and there's three specific coaches that do that strategy.
So I want to make this applicable to somebody who has nothing, right? Or maybe they have an accidental rental property. They want to flip it to short term. What advice do you have for that person?
Just make sure you underwrite your numbers properly. The issue with a lot of the services out there, like AirDNA, is it goes off of, and there's different ways to underwrite the property through. AirDNA is like the biggest place to pull comps from for short-term rentals. It tends to swing with the market. A lot of times that data is a little bit unreliable. The best strategy, in my opinion, to underwrite the property is just to look at what other listings are doing, say like 4 to 6 months out that aren't booked yet on Airbnb. That's sort of like the original strategy. It's also the simplest strategy. I would say the biggest thing is, and you're seeing it a lot with people that are converting their just normal looking single family houses into a little bit more of like a themed, unique type property. We're already doing that with the development with the outside, but for someone who's just coming into it that just has a normal single family house, I would theme it in a certain way. There are a lot of companies out there, a lot of vacation rental interior design companies that have come out the last couple of years, especially with the growth of vacation rentals, that specifically focus just on taking, say, a normal look and listing on the inside and adding some sort of theme to it. That's what I would recommend to people, is like theming it in a certain way. If you look at Airbnb, VRBO, the properties that do the best are the ones outside of the new development stuff, the ones that are actually themed in a certain way.
Yeah, we invested last year with a more institutional operator who's nationwide and is sort of taking a, consolidation approach to short-term rentals, which we haven't really seen in the market yet. And one of their biggest strategies is themed rentals, big murals on walls and things that you wouldn't want in your home, but people are very attracted to in short-term rentals.
That's all we're doing now. Yeah.
Yeah. The live, laugh, love signs all in the living rooms.
Is that what you're saying? The ivy wall with the neon light.
This is, yeah. I mean, we're talking, they'll bring in an artist, they've got a Barbie themed house. They have a bachelor party themed house with a basketball court.
So market, short-term rental, we're looking at comps. We're finding a local branding company that kind of help, sort of gussy up your place in a way that is going to be attractive to a market. Anything else? Like how do I pick a management company, or I got to manage it myself if I'm going for this status. But
you can pick a management company the second year.
The second year. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Another thing too, so this is the biggest shift that's happened in the last year, is when someone says like, I'm doing Airbnbs, like that's something that to me like screams like a beginner. It's, to me, I consider myself, I'm in hospitality, whether I have one property or 50 properties. Cool. And with that being said, I look at Airbnb should just be looked at as a distribution channel, a marketing channel. So I'd recommend getting, if you're managing it yourself, getting a property management software, which can be done relatively easily and cheaply, and getting your properties on booking.com, VRBO, Expedia, if you can. It's more like a hotel resort style, so you need more than a couple listings, but definitely Airbnb, VRBO, booking.com, and then switching, depending on how many properties you're doing, a lot of hosts are switching over to direct booking sites. So it's almost like going full circle, where people are Like back in the day, you had to pick up a phone to book a property. It's sort of the same thing where you people are capturing data from Airbnb, say like a guest stays with us. We do an email capture and then we remarket to them through our direct booking channel.
What are your thoughts on the best software that you found in order to self-manage, and how do you prevent overlapping bookings?
I love Hostaway. You need three listings to start with Hostaway, but Hostaway has been our go-to. And as you scale, there are different softwares to help you. They scale with you. If you're just starting out with one listing, Hospitable is really good to use. Those are the two I usually recommend, depending if you have one or plus like three pluses. Hostaway for sure is the most well-rounded like property management software. It also has the most integrations when it comes to the other like distribution channels. I believe they just got approved to be like the premier partner for Google Travel. But if you're just starting out with one listing, I started with Hospitable, which is a good midway point just to integrate other distribution channels.
Excellent.
Yeah, and that gives you the opportunity to like list on Airbnb and VRBO and Booking and all that, and then it takes away the listings. Then it kind of like synthesizes the listing if it's still up there. What can somebody expect to pay in service fees? In their pro forma.
So depending on the distribution channel, so Airbnb takes 14% from the host, 14% from the guest and 3% from the host. It doesn't sound like that much. It's 3%. VRBO is 3% as well. But the issue with that 14%, even though you don't see that, that's technically passed through to the guest, that's going to hurt your listing. That always hurts your listing if you're only relying on the OTAs, the online travel agencies like Airbnb and VRBO. But when it comes to actually putting it in a pro forma, it's just 3%.
That's not bad.
Yeah. But on the back end with it, like with them upcharging like 14% to the guests plus other fees, like occupancy tax, which we don't see because Airbnb collects that in our county or on our state, it hurts your listing overall because of that.
And how do you find and source your best cleaners? Because I tried Airbnb for a little bit and it seemed like that was the one fumble that I had here and there. So.
Yeah, so you want one, and this goes for anybody on your team. You want a cleaning company. You don't want like a couple. You don't want like a wife daughter like team, which I've had before. You want to source a cleaning company, and it's a simple Google search just to start. But find a cleaning company that one manages vacation rentals, like turns vacation rentals, because there's a big difference between a cleaning company that just cleans a normal single family house for a family compared to vacation rentals. They need to be in at a certain time. They need to be out at a certain time. There's no give and take with the days. So I would start with a simple Google search of just your area to start with the cleaning company, and make sure it's a cleaning. If you plan on owning multiple properties in that market, make sure it's a company that you can grow with, or at least they have like 10, 15, 20 listings. I look for a company also that has their own laundromat. I've worked with three different cleaning companies in my market that they do the cleaning. They take the cleaning offsite, they clean it and then bring it on site. So you don't have to have a washer dryer running when the guest checks in.
Yeah, that's excellent. I think that's something that, some people that are new to the business might miss, right? It's like, okay, I understand I'm going to have to be fielding calls. You're going to have to manage the cleaners and the cleaning schedule and all of that stuff. So
that's one of the few things where it's like, okay, start before like you're 100%, but like they cannot miss those. Like right. You miss a turn, like you're refunding the guests, which is hurting your account. Like that is something that needs to be 100, close to as you can get it to 100% in your business is the cleaning side.
Makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Let's talk about furnishing. And, you know, we were talking about themed rentals earlier. You know, I just saw this really cool listing that you were talking about A-frames. It's an A-frame build in Maine, and it's a fly-in cabin. Ryan, you'd love this. We got to go check this out. It's got some Adirondack chairs outside with a fire pit, and it's just beautifully done. And it's not somewhere that you would want to live. If you saw it listed for sale, you'd think, yeah, I don't think I could live there, but it's perfect for vacation rental, right? So can you speak to just sort of like the different style of design and what you want to put into your first vacation rental?
Yeah. I mean, I have countless Pinterest boards and countless albums in my phone that are just Instagram things, like screenshots. I just add them and take inspiration from. A really cool place to start, again, is Airbnb. They have these categories now that you can click on the OMG category. You can click on every single one of those categories that are going to be unique to your area or like close to you and see the top ranking ones are the most popular properties in the market. So like go grab inspiration from them. It's fine to have, when I first started, there was one other A-frame in my city. Now there's 20. Hasn't affected my occupancy in any way. If you're quote unquote stealing some inspiration from properties in your market, it's completely fine. There's more than enough guests that are coming into a market for you to have a couple other versions of a specific unique property. So Airbnb, Instagram, just drawing inspiration from. When I first started, I didn't know anything about interior design. I still don't. I've always just gone off of like a three-color scheme. So it's like, I always like to choose three colors and I don't like when colors touch. And that's a pretty simple way of going with like the interior design piece. But if you're looking to do something like unique, whether it be ground up development or just like spice up your property, just look at what's already doing well on Airbnb through those categories.
Pilots are untrustworthy people. I mean, they're trustworthy. They're trustworthy. You can trust them, but we don't trust other people, right? We always trust but verify everything. So what guests do you not rent to and how do you control that? Because I think we're going to have issues of, you know, control, right? We're going to want to know who's running our houses and, or maybe, I don't know, maybe we won't, but at least that's kind of a hang up for me is like, who's in my head?
Untrusting.
Yeah, we're untrusting. Right? We're not untrustworthy. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I did not mean to say that. We're very trustworthy people, but we're untrusting of others. I'll get my vernacular down here.
So we learned this lesson with a property that can sleep 16 people. In my opinion, that's way too much. That invites parties no matter what. And 16 right. people together, that's a party. Like that, for the most part. Another thing that we realized in the last like 6-7 years of managing is that I would say 80% of our problem guests came from one-day bookings, especially last-minute one-day bookings. Mm-hmm. So we have a buffer in our calendar of 3 to 4 days. Some people would say that's too much. Like we don't accept like last-minute bookings within 3 or 4 days, and we don't accept one-night bookings unless, and our software does this automatically, unless if there's a gap in the calendar. So say like Monday, Tuesday is booked and Thursday, Friday is booked. Wednesday will open up. It's called an orphan day setting. Wednesday will open up. We'll rent to a one-day booking just to fill up our calendars. But like historically, like in the beginning, we were getting a lot of like one-day bookings that were like back-to-back-to-back. Say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, right. Thursday. Or the worst was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And people always request last-minute check-ins or like early check-ins, late check-outs when they're one-night booking. So that's the first thing. Second thing is just you're allowed to have outdoor cameras. Like people forget that. No indoor stuff, obviously, but you're allowed to have cameras pointed towards your, like, say, parking area, ring cameras just to see who's coming in and out. We use remote lock to like it scrambles the locks and whatnot just to see how many people are coming in and out. Minute sensors are another really cool thing for like noise decibel levels. That's for guests that are already in your properties, but the one night bookings for sure on like how to mitigate that, and then when they're actually in your property, how to handle them without destroying their like privacy and whatnot.
I think the decibel sensors are really interesting. That's one where you can have that inside. You can't have a camera, but you can have a decibel sensor, and so it sends off an alert if there's a party, right?
It doesn't record; it just right. monitors. And I think that's we haven't put them in yet, but our, that same company also put created a smoke detector to tell you when like someone's smoking in your property.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. I like that. How do you communicate? This is going back to the cleaner question. How do you communicate with the cleaners when there's a schedule change or someone books that Wednesday last minute? Is it handled through the software? Or is that a manual process?
That actually goes back to the other question on how to choose a cleaning company. All of that needs to be integrated. Both Hospitable and Hostaway allow you to integrate with whatever companies they use. The current cleaning company uses a software called Resort Cleaning that is literally specific for vacation rental cleaners. And if it's a last minute, well, we don't take last minute bookings, but say like if you were to take last minute bookings, we have a couple virtual assistants that work for us that will tell like if it's 4 days out, our cleaners are getting a message saying, hey, someone just booked quote unquote last minute. That's last minute to us. That's great. So that's how we handle that. Most of it's integrated, but if it's a last minute booking, it's sent to our cleaning company, like via like a virtual assistant.
Yeah. Alex, I really appreciate you opening up and kind of showing us how the sausage is made here in short-term rentals. You mentioned you raise money. So you raise money and go syndicate short-term rentals and then proffer investors to participate in your offerings. Yeah. So talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, that came from just having so many people in my community and mentors and just watching how they operate and what they do. And we're doing a single asset raise right now. In my opinion, it's for one of the top vacation rental properties in the country. It's 20 units, is a treehouse community that's in my market. And the whole idea of even start raising the money myself just started from working with other funds. Like we have a fund that we have partnered with. This deal, I felt confident that I could do it myself, or my company could do it, in raising the capital. So that's where that whole came from. It was just like, I learned that whole business originally, like how to talk to fund managers through multifamily books. Cause there wasn't anything on how to raising capital, whether it be self-storage, whether it be multifamily, whether it be mobile home parks, the numbers that for the most part at their essence is the same. So I leaned really heavily on how to, like for multifamily books, on how to put an entire fund deal together.
Great. Interesting. Yeah. Well, how do people find out more about you? I'd love to take a look at the treehouse and maybe even stay in it. How do people find out more about you and the information you put out and the project itself?
Yeah, so we actually just built an entire website just for this property alone, and you guys can check out all the videos and everything that are on the website. That's going to be, and I'm sure it's going to be linked in the show notes somewhere. That's going to be openatlas.investments. Open Atlas is our investment and management company. But openatlas.investments, that URL literally takes you to the website that we built just for this one property alone. Very, very, really, really unique treehouses and theme type properties all within like a 15 acre radius that are all on the same property.
Super cool. And that's in Asheville, outside of Asheville.
Yeah, it's actually some of the properties have gone like viral on TikTok. They've gotten over like 50 million views and whatnot. What?
Awesome.
It's crazy. Airbnb's featured a couple of them as well on their page, for their international page. Yeah.
Well, Alex, we really appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom. This was highly impactful, and I think our listeners will get a lot out of this. And now they know about you. And if you have any questions, or you're looking for your next stay, or park some bucks, Alex, your guy for short term rentals. So appreciate you coming on. For those listeners tuning in, thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next one.